Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
10, 20, 30, 40, 50.
Welcome to Inside United. Actually, welcome to part two of a program with Andy Chapman. She is the regional and clinical educator for Heart to Heart Hospice and a member of the Flint United Church of God. But in this section here, we hope that you have heard part one. We'll talk about how to help someone facing death confront their fears. How can we be helpful? One way you can help is to have the right words and the right expressions and the right sentiments for those who are facing death.
Well, we have to be gentle about it, and we have to be compassionate, and we have to be real. So one of the first things as a nurse, I want to remember to leave my credentials at the door. I'm not a nurse when I'm talking to somebody about this serious illness. I want to be there as a compassionate listener, somebody who really does care about them. And I think that's so vital, no matter what your role, even as a minister. Leave your credentials at the door. Talk to them, because they need someone who really loves them at that point. The second one is to, obviously, we're going to make contact with them. We're going to have eye contact. Put the phone down. We have to be really attentive. We have to be really relaxed and fixate on that person. And I'm not talking them, giving them the death stare. Mm-hmm. I'm talking, you know, be genuine and keep their attention, keep their focus on them. And be open-minded, because how they feel might not be how you feel. And we're not going to judge this person for what they're saying. Even if it goes against the grain for something that we believe is different, don't correct them at that time. You can explore that later on, but they need to be able to open it up and express how they feel, because they're going to have a lot of emotions. They might even be angry at the time. They might be just bewildered. But accept the fact that that is going to change from time to time, but listen to them. And when we're listening, we want to make sure that we're not listening to just respond, that we're listening so that we can really understand the situation. So paraphrase back to them, ask questions, that kind of thing. But don't just listen with your ears. Listen with your eyes and listen with your heart, because that's where compassion is going to flow.
And people react differently. Mm-hmm. Some people clam up. Some people want to keep it private. Mm-hmm. People have in a prayer request may write to me, you know, is the president of the church, you know, said, I have been diagnosed with such, but please keep this very, very quiet. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's kept quiet for a long period of time. Some people write about it on Facebook, you know, they almost give up. So each person has to be dealt with differently. And as you mentioned, you leave your credentials at the door. You don't just go there and just say some things and not be really focused on them, but be very genuinely prepared to listen to what they might have to say.
Yeah. And sometimes, again, you know, you can open up that conversation. I know that you haven't been feeling well. And is there anything I can do to help you?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you offer, do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have to make the suggestion. And I always get frustrated with, if there's anything I can do.
Oh, I've heard that so many times.
Oh, my. You know, if you know that this person is ill and they have a lawn that needs mowing, don't say, is there anything I can do? Say, you know what? I have Friday free. Is it okay if I come and mow your lawn?
Right.
And so just be specific.
I've seen this at a funeral, mm-hmm. where people, as they leave the family, the bereaved widow and so forth, if there is anything that we can do, please call us. And nothing ever
Absolutely.
Happens. Both ways, from the person who said that to the bereaved people. And life just goes on. After all the mm-hmm. noise at the funeral and after all the support there, it gets very, very quiet.
I think that one of the things that we need to do is keep that connectivity, to make sure that we offer to do things and be specific and do those things. Mm-hmm. After about three to five weeks, life goes on for normal for everybody else, but not for the bereaved. And they're going through a lot of firsts. They're going through a first Sabbath, a first feast, a first night alone, all of these firsts that they're going to experience, and a first birthday.
Mm-hmm.
A friend died about 2 years ago, and her birthday came up, and I sent her mother a nice note, you know, and I remember her smile, and it was so a blessing to have her in my life, and, you know, thank you for sharing your daughter. I'm sorry that you don't have her with you anymore, but I'm so thankful that you gave birth to her.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just wonderful to be able to keep those lines of communication open as well.
But then there are some lines of communication that may not be so good.
Oh, no.
People can say things that could be inconsiderate and say some things that actually may cause more hurt, even though the person is well-meaning.
You can encourage someone or think you're encouraging someone by saying, oh, you're so strong, but they may feel like they're just wilted broccoli. They don't feel very strong at all, but they have to put up this strong front because that's what people expect of them. Or you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're never okay again. There's a grief that is unique to you, and you might get better. You'll laugh again at some point and feel guilty because you laughed when you should be sad.
Mm-hmm.
So you think. But that's a part of the healing process. But to say you're going to be okay, no, you're changed.
How do you know that?
Yeah, how do you know? You have this little crystal ball because I want one.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about somebody and saying, you know, this happened for a reason. What could possibly be the reason for a child dying?
No.
It doesn't make sense. You go up there and I know how you feel. No, you don't. You didn't lose this person. So we have to think about what we're saying. It might sound like you are saying something that's kind and loving, but it's actually like a knife going through, and it's just hurtful.
We should always be just very thoughtful as we talk to people.
Yes, be empathetic.
So it's not just talking to people, but it's saying the right things and probably as important, not saying the wrong things.
Exactly. Exactly. I never tell people that it's part of God's plan because that's just cruel. What kind of God allowed my child or my husband to go through that kind of event in their life? And how could a God who loves me see that I'm so miserable and allow this to happen?
One of this is the greatest philosophical question. And one of the deterrents to people becoming Christian is, how could a loving God allow this? Or how could a loving God allow the evil that we have in this world?
Mm-hmm.
And yet there is an explanation, but in the right place, in the right time.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's where having all of these conversations before death really comes in handy. I had mentioned in the seminar that even Jesus died. And how he made provisions for Mary, his mother. And that shows love. From the time that you're diagnosed and you're going through all of this process, we have to remember who is really important here. It's your family, the ones who are going to be left standing, the ones that are going to be grieving for you. Make provisions for these people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to do. And we can't do that if we're not having conversations. We're not teaching our children about death. If we're not talking about it like it doesn't happen to anybody, it happens.
Mm-hmm. It's not too early to acquaint our children with death,
mm-hmm.
because they will be acquainted with it when they see grandma and grandpa die.
Exactly.
I know that my son was very, very young when my mother died. She died after a short bout with acute leukemia. It was only 3 weeks. And he says, I don't want grandma to die. She can't die. In other words, I deny it. This is not happening.
Mm-hmm.
But he was young. And I remember having to have him on our lap, you know, and talking to him about that this happened and to comfort him in what had happened. So it's important to take the time to calmly explain these things and have it all come out and be able to give reasonable answers.
And I think that so many times we don't confront what is an actual reality. We talk in generalities. It's always something that happens to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hit close to home at some point.
And you have to sort through that.
Yes, you do.
Probably one of the most difficult things I had was when I was pastor in Paducah, Kentucky, there was an outbreak of Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And there were about 10 boys who died of it that summer. I mean, in one city. It was just a lot. And one of them was the son of one of our members in the church. And it was such big news. I mean, it was on the radio, and they had so many people at the funeral of this boy, which I did. It was just extremely difficult thing. But it required time. It required visiting the family. And you brought that out today about how important it is to have follow-ups and talks.
Yeah. You know, to paraphrase one of the scriptures that, you know, to have friends, you have to show yourself friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's throw compassion in there. You have to show compassion to these individuals. And if we show compassion more, we're going to wind up with more compassion in our society. And I think we're walking away from that.
Well, we have enjoyed you very much. And one thing that really struck me is that when you started talking to us this morning, it was that the first thing you did was to throw your shoes off. You took your shoes off in front of the whole audience. I said, this makes me feel comfortable, and that's probably the best thing you could do on a subject like this, because we felt comfortable too.
Well, thank you.
We sort of let our guard down of what's she going to talk about death now about to us, but she kicked her shoes off. I don't know if you kicked them off, but you took them off, and we just sat there. We felt much more comfortable about the subject. The grieving process now, when someone dies, it's up and down for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to share with us just some of what to expect, not only for ourselves, but when we see somebody who's lost a husband, lost a wife, as to what they're going through, and not only how you can deal with it yourself, but how you can help someone who's going through this traumatic period.
Okay. Well, you know, there are stages of grief, and it's not linear. There are people who are going to start the grieving process at the time of diagnosis. It's going to change for every individual. And I think one of the first things that we do see is that shock, especially with an unexpected death. You know, so this denial, this couldn't have happened. How did this happen? And then people do get angry. And then they get guilty because they're angry with the person who died, like they had some control over this. So it's not a linear process. They're going to have ups, they're going to have downs. And I think the thing that we need to do is know them well enough that we can help them through those really down times so that it doesn't wind up going deeper into what could be a depression or, you know, some kind of unhealthy mental behavior from this. So eventually, I think most of us come to an acceptance and an understanding. The child that I talked about that we lost, you know, I didn't understand the rationale behind that. I didn't get it at all. Gradually, I've learned to accept it and how that experience actually can help somebody else who might be shocked at what happened to them and dealing with the loss of a baby. So, you know, everything that happens to us is a good learning step. The same thing happens with grief. We have to confront grief to some degree, but we also have to be very flexible because it's going to change. There's going to be ups and there's going to be downs. But we have to not stay in the downs.
How can you help somebody who is approaching that depression stage? I can understand that. I can understand how somebody can become so sad that you just can't pull out of it.
It might help to talk to them and say, you know, I know this really hurts and must be very lonely without so-and-so in your life. I remember that smile that they had. And you try to remember something good and bring them out of that depression by, instead of focusing on the negative and what they don't have, look at the positive and what you did have and how it changed your life to the better.
I know that when I have been around people who've lost someone, one of the complaints they would have to me is that, well, when so-and-so comes to visit me, they want to cheer me up, but they won't even mention my husband or they won't mention my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that's all I want to hear. I want to hear her name again. But they won't bring it up because they'll think that that offends me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that could be something that would be a very encouraging and comforting thing. And that could bring cheer. It could be, in a sense, bringing back.
Absolutely. And that doesn't happen just after the death. It can happen prior to, you know, because we have a tendency, we don't know what to say. And so the best thing to do is just, we'll go over here and we'll send a card every now and then, or we'll send a casserole. But that's not what people need. They need, well, they need the casserole every now and then. So, but they really do need you. They need to know that you care about them and you want to be there for them. After the death, saying that name is so important. Our next door neighbor passed away, and it's really been kind of awful for his wife and daughter and their son. It's been very sad. But we go over to the house and say, you know, remember playing triominoes? And Jim was always messing up that one triomino. Yeah. And we would have some way to laugh about this, but bringing them back into a very positive mode. And yes, it's going to make people sad sometimes, but they'll let you know. Most people will let you know. I really don't want to talk about that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But don't take offense at it.
I talked to one person who, this was 5 years after their divorce, which is like a death.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we started talking about things, and all of a sudden this person just broke down and started sobbing. And it was a good sob. Mm-hmm. It was like letting it out. And it could have been, if she had died, you know, if it could have been some other tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was letting out pent-up emotions with another human being. Mm-hmm. And then after it subsided, it was like, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I can go on from here.
Yes, as a hospice nurse, I encounter that a lot, where people will just cry and cry over what's going on. And they say, I don't have any words. And I say, that's okay. Tears are a language we understand.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there aren't any words. Sometimes they just need people to sit quietly with them and just be there.
Mm-hmm.
Just be.
I might share with you a grieving in Africa, because this was very interesting and perhaps something we could even learn from. We were there 2 years ago, and just before we arrived, one of our members' daughter, 13-year-old daughter, was killed on a bicycle.
Mm.
In fact, she was cut in half by a car that had hit her, and you know, we knew them, and it was tragic. And of course, our desire, my wife Bev and I, was to go visit her, because she was right there in Lusaka, the capital of Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
And the pastor told us, I want you to understand the grieving process. He says, I really want you to understand, because this was like 4 or 5 days afterwards. The funeral had already been held. And we were told to go to this house where all her friends were grieving with her. It was totally silent. They're very poor and so forth. So we sat on this dirt floor. And the expectation was for us to come and sit with her. My wife and I sat with her for 20 minutes. No words. Mm-hmm. Nothing. We held her hand. We gave her a hug. We had a prayer. But then in that same room, there were 20, 25 other women. Or there were maybe some men as well there. Mm-hmm. The women were out, you know, but the women were there. And that's a grieving process where they are like that for a period of a week or two, where people just bond together and they just sift through the darkness of the moment together. And it really seems to work.
Oh, yeah. That sounds actually a lot better than what we do sometimes.
You mentioned about that one tragic situation where the TV was going and the kids were playing tag and everything.
It was crazy. Yeah, that's not exactly the best way to either go out of this world or deal with it.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was different.
But I found that to be very interesting. We had never been part of the grieving process. We were coached beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen her since. She's been, you know, smiles and so forth. But there was a tragic thing, a teenage daughter who had gone up north to visit relatives and was killed on a bicycle. It was just terrible. But the way that the community and the church responded culturally, I thought was just illuminating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody has their own traditions, and I think we're a product of our traditions that we've grown up by. Personally, I think that would appeal to me more,
mm-hmm.
The way that they do it, because at least while words are not being said, your presence is there, and she knew that you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that would be very meaningful.
Andy, what about other important things about the grieving process? Is there anything else you can add?
You're going to hear a lot of things come out of a grieving person, and they need to get it out. Let them do it.
And they may say some things that are not very nice.
Exactly.
And that doesn't mean that you judge them, because they'll say some things and use some language.
Right.
That is not kosher.
Right. And you might even agree. Who knows?
And stay the same. But certainly the anger, the frustration, the bitterness mm-hmm. of life is certainly there, and you have to work through that together.
Absolutely you do, or it will destroy you.
And not having closure.
Right.
Not having closure.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't have any closure. You know, what struck me, we were talking about somebody who never got to say goodbye. I can't even imagine how difficult that must be, especially if you had a really good relationship or even a mediocre relationship. You still want that opportunity to say goodbye to that person. We're not going to see them again in this life. That's for sure.
And so I feel like it's important, and of course you're the one who's the expert, you know, in this, to have these closing moments, to have these mm-hmm. moments where you can bring resolution. Because ultimately, the story of the Word of God is bringing reconciliation mm-hmm. and a reconciliation to God and man from the life that we live now, where we learn a lot of lessons, a lot of them to put on ice to be able to restore it as we go through life. Well, Andy, it's been a wonderful experience
Thank
to have you talk to us and talk about a subject which is so very much relevant. This applies to everyone because you mm-hmm. will come into contact, or you will be a part of this experience for mankind, which is death and dying.
Yes, whether you're rich or poor, educated or not, death levels that playing field.
It's the great equalizer.
It
is. Whether you're a king or whether you're a slave,
yeah.
we'll all come to the same reset mode.
Yeah, we will. That's a good way to put it.
It doesn't really matter. So, Andy, thank you very much. We really appreciated your coming here. We hope to have you come again and talk to us on related subjects, because she is expert at giving seminars and has been very successful at it. We know why. As hearing her delightfully explain things that are very difficult questions.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us Inside United. We've enjoyed having Andy Chapman with us talking about subjects that maybe we don't want to talk about, but we should, that are very relevant to our lives. So thank you for coming here. We hope that you come back again soon for more on Inside United.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.